All right, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to our first training call for this new round of Smart Body, Smart Mind. I forgot to mention before I hit record, but just for some housekeeping, I know a lot of you are new here. A lot of you aren't new. We have a lot of alumni who are returning. Just a note for Zoom. If your camera's on, we can see you. I can see about 49 or so people on my screen. So if you get up and start walking around, just turn your video off because it can be a little distracting to see. It's like watching a movie going down a hallway. So just turn off your video if you do start to move around with your phone or your device. I really like it when we can allow minors in the background to be private. So if you have any kiddos, infants that might pop through, just pop off that video so they can stay private. And one note, the chat. So this is my chat talk to everyone. We like to keep the chat really quiet during the training calls. I might ask a prompt, meaning a question that I have for all of you. And of course, because we have quite a few people here, I won't be able to read and respond to every single prompt or word that you might write into the chat. And that's okay. For those here, you can see that and watch that. But just know today isn't a Q&A call per se. It's really to learn the content. And then if you have a burning question that you just can't wait to ask, and it's in regards to this training call, very important, then post it in the chat and Rebecca can help you out. But if it can wait until after, post that in our general questions thread, and then the team will get to that. Just think of us, there's like just under 400 people here. Did anybody go to a 400, 500 person lecture in university or college? I sure did. It wasn't fun when there was lots of chats going on and the professor wouldn't have anything to do with that. He would make sure people would be quiet. So even though I know you're all quiet, the chat does disturb the energy and it gets people looking at the chat. Of course, you can ignore the chat if it's distracting. I keep an eye on it just to make sure that something isn't funny with my internet or anything like that. But that is sort of the chat rules for the training calls. The other thing, make sure you take care of yourselves. So before we get into training call number one, where we are talking about coherence, flow, containment, and capacity, know that if you have to pause, if you have to walk away from the screen, if you need to come back and listen to the recording tomorrow or whenever, know that that is for you to feel into and to really respect. So part of our learning here in Smart Body, Smart Mind is really learning to honor our impulses, honor what our system is asking. Because what do you think happens when we don't? It's keeps knocking louder at us and our brain, our cognition stops learning. So everyone's at different levels. Just know that you're going to want to listen to that survival stress that might come up and listen to it and go, I'm going to listen to this after. So this is different than university lectures that I went to where there were no recordings and you couldn't come back. You'd have to beg and plead for someone else's notes after class and maybe buy them a beer, right? That's not going to happen here in this case. You can listen and learn at any time. And for those perfectionists here and all of the overachievers, that's going to be hard to walk away when you know you have to pause for the day. But really, again, this is my first training call for this round. I'm going to be saying this over and over again. And there's a reason I'm giving time to it at the beginning is I really mean it when I say you want to take time and titrate the learning, the education. And I do little breaks while we go through this too, but know that you do not have to break or wait until I say break. Quick housekeeping, with each training call, there are two handouts. One has blanks where you're going to fill in. The other has answers that are already filled in. You choose how you go through this. They're both on the site where you entered in to find this call. The links to both PDFs are there. So it's up to you how you move through this. I personally like pen and paper, helps me learn, right? And I think in our online world, we've gotten away from that. And I think it's making it such that information doesn't sink in the same way when you write it down. So if you're not used to writing things down, and I also understand some of you, English is not your first language. So I understand that that might not be as easy to write, but if you can make little scribbles, and let your hand up get messy if it needs to. Take your own notes, things that come into your mind. So before we get started, let's practice some nervous system basics. We'll get into the call. We'll get into the learning. And you've been learning this from week one, but let's take a second and take a second to orient a little bit, to just break the visual with the computer or with the device. That's the other thing. For those so new to me and you haven't done a Zoom call with me, I encourage you to look away from the screen. I encourage you to let your eyes break that lock on the screen. Not only is it good for our eyes to give them a break and look far away into the distance, it also is just good for our bodies to know that we can come away, see the space around us. So take a second to do that. Or maybe 20 seconds. And this concept of orienting will be your best friend and continue to be something you master and work with as we move through not just these 12 weeks together, but I hope the rest of your life. It's something you can do anytime, anywhere. We're all different in how we engage with orienting. For some of us newer, it might not be as comfortable. For some of us who have been around a little longer, it might just be a habit that is just embedded in your system now. And also know we change from day to day. Some days we might be a little more stressed. There might be a few more balls in the pool, which we'll get into today. And to settle and orient into the environment might not be as nice. And that's where we might pick another nervous system basic, which might be feeling the ground under you. And that ground doesn't have to be the floor. It could be what you feel against your back and the chair you're on. What can you sense? What connection to that world that isn't you? So objects, chair, floor, the seat, your kitchen table chair, whatever you're on, can you feel that sensory connection? Can you notice your breathing? What does your breathing do? Is there any tightness in your chest, in your belly, in the groin area and the perineum? These are questions that we maybe never have asked ourselves when we enter into a learning environment. Maybe, maybe not. I know I certainly wasn't asked these things when I was in school or in university. But when we can be a bit more connected to the environment, to our body, to our breath, to our need to move a little bit and reposition, stretch, yawn, have a sip of water, go to the bathroom if we need to, it takes a little bit of that survival stress away, just a little bit maybe. And that allows us to settle a bit more to learn. So at the very top of this page, I have in a little bullet point box with a check, let's practice the nervous system basics. That was my prompt for me to remind even me to ensure that we start with this to set the tone and to know that at any time, and even maybe throughout the learning, you bring that in, you fold in those basics as I do when I'm here teaching. It allows one to keep going and going because you're constantly kind of recharging your connection to the moment. Has anybody here done like a long study session or you're writing something and then you end and you don't realize that you can't feel your feet because they've been positioned in a certain way, or you realize you're starving or you really have to go to the bathroom? And so that's a very light example of how we disconnect from our body when we're really focused. And so how can we start to learn and focus along with these basics? And of course, as we go through Smart Body, Smart Mind, we're going to learn a lot more than just the basics, which is exciting, but you'll get into more juicy stuff. All right. So just from that little moment of pause, and again, this doesn't have to be everyone, but if it's quick for you to pop one word into the chat, what's one thing that you've noticed from just having a little bit of time to, we could say settle, but we could also say connect, presence, tiredness, relief, yawning, easier breathing, sleepy, pain, increased anxiety, my mind goes everywhere, irritable, relief, sleepy. Everyone, there's a lot of sleepies, right? So the other thing that this can do is it can show us how tired we are. Right. And I know for some of you, it's the nighttime. So that might be warranted because it's your evening. Thirst, pain, jitters, relief. So as you can see, thank you, everyone. There's sort of a variety of what you all are noticing. So as we move through, just see how that might shift or how it might not shift. If you're finding it impossible to keep your eyes open, then might be a good idea to come back and do this when you have a bit more energy. Because we, again, don't take things in very well when we are tired. So first little area here, page one. Now, some of you know my swimming pool and beach ball analogy. Some of you don't. This is something that I'm not sure when it came into my brain, well over 5 years ago. If you've watched one of my free trainings, which is on my site, but also on the Smart Body, Smart Mind site, it's under the additional resources. It's there. It's called the Healing Trauma video series. And the first video where I talk way more theory is sort of where I introduce this swimming pool and beach ball analogy. And so we're going to dive into that with a bit more specifics today with fun pictures of a swimming pool and with beach balls there on that first page. So, and this will all make sense as we get into this. If you're like, what does a swimming pool and beach balls have to do with my nervous system? And I will say, really, it has nothing to do with your nervous system. It's just a really good way metaphorically to describe some things. So the first bullet point there, A, the swimming pool is your, and I'll just read these things a couple times so you can write them down. The swimming pool, it's your body. I mean, really, we could just say it's your body, but within your body are a lot of things. The brain, the nervous system, the organs, your tissues, your muscles, your bones, the physicality. Also, your sensations, your emotions. Everything inside of your body. So not just the physical, but the energies. So if you just look at that swimming pool that is depicted with the rectangle with all the balls, think of that pool, that container, as your body. Next line down, B, the balls inside are your stressors or stresses, stress. And past traumas, adverse events, and you're learning through the biology of stress videos, right? The different kinds of traumas. If you haven't gotten to those yet, those will come, but shock traumas, that would be like accidents, impact, early trauma, developmental trauma, chronic stress. So the balls are your stressors and all these traumas, all the T's. Next line down. It's all about, so, and by all, I say this whole analogy and healing and regulation, it's all about more space and release and flow. I'll say that a couple more times. So what we're interested in here in SBSM and Smart Body, Smart Mind is more space. So it's all about more space and release and flow. You could put that on a fridge magnet for a reminder, right? Space, release, flow. We want good flow, like a river, right? That's moving and flowing, oxygen, cleaning, that kind of thing. D, flow is a simple word for coherence. Coherence. That is spelled C-O-H-E-R-E-N-C-E. Coherence. Coherence. Go to page 2. It's a bit more abstract right now, everyone, but we're gonna fill in the blanks and the dots and the explanations. So now you're gonna draw a picture. So this is where I'm gonna have to tell you what I want you to draw. So you have here on page number 2. So flow and coherence explained. So I want you to draw 4 circles, kind of right to left or left to right, that aren't touching each other. So 4 circles, 1, 2, 3, 4. And I'll show that to you just like that. My circles aren't perfect. Doesn't matter. I'll fix that one that's not closed. So 4 circles that aren't touching each other. And then from this, I want you to draw what we would call an infinity symbol or a sideways number 8. To connect the circles. So you're going to have a little loop-de-loop connect circle 1 and 2, another little loop-de-loop connect circle 2 and 3, and then another little loop-de-loop connecting 3 and 4. It doesn't matter what it looks like. The key is that you're then drawing a connection point between those. So they're attached, kind of like a chain link fence. But it's not a chain link fence. And then somehow connect the first circle with the fourth circle, just with a big connection point, just a nice line. And then you could connect so that it's another circle. So you've just got lots of circles going on. 4 circles, connection between the 4 and then around. So you're just making them connect. The handout that has the answers has a much more prettier drawing. So you can always look at that. And then this is the last piece. Within each circle, draw a little number 8. It can be vertical, it can be horizontal, it doesn't matter. So now that you've got this masterpiece of circles, and connection points. And what I'll do, I'm going to show you, let's see if I can show you this, put it up to the screen. So that's the one on the handout that has the answers and that little graphic drawing. 4 circles, they're connected from the outside, and then there's an 8 in each. All right. Hopefully this isn't bringing up art class trauma for some of us here, right? Don't worry about it. The messier, the better. So what this is doing is it's my very simplistic way of describing this body of ours. And we could say that each circle is a cell. And within each cell, we want flow. We could say each circle is a body system, like the digestive system. Yeah. And we want flow. We could even say that each circle is a person and we want flow in the whole person. So we can extrapolate this to the universe if we wanted to, but we won't right now. So we want flow within, but we also want flow between, right? So we want our hormones to talk to the digestion. We want the digestion to talk to our brain, to tell us when we're full, when we're hungry, when we're thirsty. We want the nervous system to say, hey, there's a threat. We better do something. So we want connection. We want flow. So in many ways, this drawing process is just to tactfully see and feel this connection between ourselves, but also others and the environment. Yeah. So we want to have this ongoing connection and flow. And so the next line down underneath this drawing says, having good flow means good coherence. Things are talking to each other. It's like a clear telephone line. Versus when you have a bad connection, there isn't good flow going through. This is an old way of thinking it, through the telephone line. Now it's different, right? Static on an old style TV. There isn't a good connection coming through. There's a missing signal. So when we think about dysregulation and when we think about dis-ease, too much survival stress, the flow is being hindered. Maybe the flow is too much and then it stops. Right? For those of us who have experienced things like, say, digestive troubles, where there's either this flipping between constipation and diarrhea, that would be too much or not enough flow, constipation, and then open the floodgates, diarrhea, right? To be as graphic as possible. That's one of the best examples of dysregulation creating this jagged flow. Stop, start, stop, start. If we've ever had heart palpitations, you know, real stress in the cardiovascular, that's the heart, the system being in survival stress. Something is not flowing correctly. It's flowing too much, right? Whereas, and you're going to learn more about this when we shut down, when we go into freeze, what's happening to the flow? It's slowing down. It's going too slow. That's where we get lethargy. We have collapse. The blood isn't moving. We're more fatigued, right? Oxygen, nutrients aren't coming to our cells and they're also not going out. So essentially what we want as we become more regulated, this flow within cells, between cells, between organ systems, between us and the environment, right? The more attuned we are to the environment, the more able we're able to see danger, the more able we are to see beauty. But if our flow is cut off from the environment, we're not going to see anything. Or the opposite, we see too much and we're hypervigilant to the point where it's too much input. For those of us that might classify ourselves as overly sensitive, right? Highly empathic. It's just all the energies coming in. We're being bombarded with too much flow, too much information, but we need some of it. So in essence, we are playing abstractly with this idea of flow with this drawing, but I could, and I won't, but we could be here for 5 hours and I could give you all the different examples of how nervous system dysregulation impacts our cells, impacts our healing capacity, impacts our social engagement, connection with the environment. We want flow and we want it to shift based on circumstance. Okay. Take a second to pause. I'm going to have a little water Let that sink in. Okay. Next line. What is containment? So containment, I'll say this quickly once and then I'll go again. So containment is staying embodied and connected to the environment and your internal state while experiencing bodily experiences, sensations, feelings, images, thoughts, actions, behaviors, no matter how intense or activating. So I'm going to say that now slowly. So containment is staying embodied. Embodied is the first word. Staying in these cells, in our insides. And connected to the environment, the world around us. Maybe it's a person. Maybe it's something, the weather, sounds, light. So staying embodied and connected to the environment and your internal state. While, and this is the big piece about containment, I'll explain this in a second, while experiencing bodily experiences, no matter how intense or activating. And the other key here is at the same time. So you could add that in. I don't have that there. But what occurs when we have, we could say dysregulation, we're not practiced in being embodied in our insides and in the environment. And for many of you, you're going to feel this as you start learning orienting and some of the other lessons we're going to do is you can focus on orienting, but you lose connection with your body. Has anybody experienced that? That they're like, I can do that, but I can't do this. Or I can feel my breath, but when I sense my breath, I can't see outside. I can't orient. That is just a matter of practice. We're meant to have all these things at one moment in one time point. It's the dysregulation. It's the trauma. It's the stuff that pulls us out of that. I like to call it this multitasking of our awareness, right? Where we're feeling all these things, but we're containing them. And containing them is meaning we're not being overwhelmed. We're not dropping the balls, so to speak. You know, we're able to take in the things, feel them, sense them, know we're in this environment and not get overwhelmed. As we start out on this journey, and I'm just going to be, you know, blunt, there will be many of you that it's going to take you months to be able to master this, and that's okay, right? Just the other day, someone sent me a message saying, I oriented and only practiced that for 6 months, and now I can finally orient and feel my breath at the same time. That's a huge win, right? When we never had that for, let's say, 50 years of our lives or more. Right? So it's going to take some time to loop in some of these new practices of staying in this contained quality with the environment and the world coming at us. So just make sure I don't want to say anything more about that and then we'll keep going. So I know that there was a chat last Thursday with Jen and Seth on early trauma. I don't know if some of you were able to head to that and check that out. It was good, I think, from what I heard. They did a good job, which is awesome. And I would expect that. And when we are working with and healing, say, early trauma, developmental trauma, we work on these things by, as I said, first working on one thing. So again, it might be orienting or it might be breath. With time, and trust me with this, you will start to go, oh, I'm orienting and I just noticed my feet on the ground. How novel is that? Right? Or I'm noticing my feet on the ground and I'm naturally starting to notice my breath. So sometimes these little basics slip in while we're focused on one thing. So one might say that getting this nervous system regulation on board is just building our ability to not only be mindful, but to be very much aware of ourselves and the environment and all the things that are occurring. So sometimes we just work with one thing and then we see naturally how those things kind of slot in. And sometimes we actively work with more than one thing and work with that. So there's no right or wrong. It's just for some of us, we might start with one thing. For others, we might work with a couple things or maybe five things. As we get more masterful, that's how that works. All right, next line down. To increase this flow, space, containment, and capacity to have more chance for release. So I'm going to explain this release part. So if we look at that swimming pool on the first page, we really want to, and we'll get into this into page 3 and 4, we want to move these balls, these stressors out of our system. So the other part of this analogy is we don't want to pack our swimming pool with so many balls that the balls can't move, right? If you imagine a swimming pool with tons of beach balls in the pool, when they're really packed in there and you could feel this tactly in your system, it might be hard to maneuver one out. That makes sense? They're so packed in. Sometimes we don't worry about the release. We're not trying to get the big stressors, the traumas out. We're just worried about opening up the pool. So imagine if you had that pool and you made it just a little bigger, what would happen with the balls? They would have more space, right? To wiggle. And then you'd be able to come in and take them out a little bit. So that's a preview for page 3 and 4. I just wanted to mention that, right? So to go back to page 2, when we increase the flow, space, containment, and capacity and have more chance for release, right? We want to work and practice. Sorry, I'm going to say this again. We want to work on and practice these 6 things. So to increase this flow, increase the space, increase this containment, and have more chance for release of these balls, we want to practice these 6 things. Now, I'm going to name these things. These are not the only things, because the things that we practice are all the things that you're going to practice and learn in Smart Body, Smart Mind through the neurosensory exercises. And there's about 32 of them. So this is just 6 of them. So the first thing is orienting. I've already mentioned that. I can't stress it enough. Number 1 is orienting. Number 2, awareness. I'm going to dive into what these mean more specifically on the next page. Awareness. 3, self-awareness. One might say that they're the same thing, but I'm going to be a bit more distinct and name the differences. So self-awareness. Number 4, I like to abbreviate it FYI, follow your impulse, following your impulse. Number 5, you won't know this, the newbies won't know this, the alum will, joints and diaphragms, joints and diaphragms. These are spaces of the body that we're going to work with when we get into week 3, 4, 5. Diaphragms. 6, kidney adrenal interface. Kidney adrenal interface. So let's go to page 3, and then you'll see on page 3, these are outlines. If you're not sure how to spell diaphragms, not an easy one. The spelling is there under number 5. I still have trouble spelling that word, to be honest. Okay, page 3, number 1, orienting. So remember, these are the things that we're starting to practice to make this pool of ours, this capacity bigger, and allow for more flow in our pool so that these balls, these stressors can start to come on out of the system. So orienting, number one, it sparks up the social engagement nervous system, which is the ventral vagal of the parasympathetic nervous system. I like to sometimes abbreviate that VV, ventral vagal. This detail will be in the biology of stress videos. But just as a reminder, again, the social engagement system is unique to mammals, humans, other animals, and it's part of the parasympathetic nervous system, which is the slowing down nervous system. We want engagement with people and the environment when it is not threatening to bring us into more of an easy state, a slowing down state. Now, of course, for us, those here who are new and you know you're living in dysregulation and there's a lot of pools, balls in your pool and your pool is very small, you might be going, what the heck, Irene? Engaging with people is not relaxing. Engaging with the environment, that's not fun. And I say, I understand that. And that's why you're here, right? The wires got crossed. The engagement that you maybe were brought up with was not how it should have been. Yeah. And so it makes it so that, yeah, no way, people bad. Because all the people I grew up with bad. Right. And I want to remind everyone, people can be good. Right. We're all here. We're learning. We're good. Right. And so the environment, again, if we had incidences when we were young where we had a shock trauma from something in the environment that hit us, maybe a car accident, or maybe it was a person that was mean to us, abusive, then yeah, the environment, not friendly. So for those of you, when you start to orient and it's just not easeful, it's very possible that's why, because the outside world was toxic and threatening. And so part of relearning and rewiring and regulating is engaging with these practices in a way that is conscious based. I'm doing this to see, there's no car coming at me. There's no fist coming at me. There's no toxic words coming at me. You might say, I'm not so sure, but you keep practicing and you keep listening. So we want orienting to get to the point where we are feeling that sparking up of our social engagement, and it will soothe us. It will ease us. It will physiologically take us out of a stress response. If you've ever experienced something of an accident, and some of you might have this memory where you had someone, a passerby, a school teacher, someone friendly come up to you and say, are you okay? And you might remember that, and you might connect still with someone that you met when you were 5 years old or wherever, and you can still remember how they helped you come down, right? That is an example of social engagement bringing us into a bit more of an easy state. All right, number two, awareness. So this is more general awareness with the world and your environment. So you can be out in the environment and not strategically orienting, but just be aware of the stuff that's around you. One might say, well, that's also orienting, Irene. And I say, yes, you're right. It could also be orienting because you orient with your ears, your smell, vibration, right? If you're on a street and you feel the rumble on the road because a big Mack truck or lorry truck is coming down the road, you know that feeling. Right? That's an awareness of your environment. We need to have that to know, look, ooh, there's something coming this way. Same with, hearing. You're driving down the street, you hear sirens. I think that is still one of the interesting things when I'm driving in a city, not everyone does, but it's fascinating to see the humans in the cars hear the sirens and everyone just kind of pulls over because that's what you're supposed to do. And then there's always the odd person that you're like, they're not paying attention. They're either listening to too loud of music, they're talking to someone, or they're completely unaware of their environment. And that's dangerous if you really think about it, right? When you're driving. So it makes me happy not when I hear an ambulance, but when I see everybody, you know, being aware and taking care of this situation. So awareness of the world and the environment is important. We also don't want to be hyper aware, right? We don't want to be overly so aware that we are disconnected from self. This is where, to get just a practical example, the folks who struggle with, say, we would call it ADD or ADHD, there's a hyper attention to the world around us, or we can't focus. And what we've seen is that is often a result of dysregulation. The system is hyperly alert to the world around, because usually when we were young, we were trained, we were wired to be hyper-focused, to look for danger. And so fast forward 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, and we're still in that massive hyperactivity to be attentive, or the opposite, we're not able to be attentive. There's a deficit to focus and have attention. So again, these things have spectrums, right? We want healthy awareness that isn't putting us into more survival stress. Number three, self-awareness. So this is really a huge part of what you will be learning as you move through the lessons in SBSM. So self-awareness with yourself and your insides. Those are the first two words. AKA, also known as your interoception. So number three is self-awareness. This is self-awareness with yourself, your insides, also known as your interoception. Interoception is just a fancy word for perception of your internal environment. We'll talk way more about interoception as we move through our weeks together. The one thing I'll add to this is, just to give you a practical example, when we are shut down, when we are more in a freezy state, when we're in a more collapsed state, but also when we're in a more hyper alert state, when we're looking for danger, we're not interested in what's happening in our digestion, right? It's like the threat is more important than food, than feeling our insides doing what they're doing. And so we disconnect from this internal world. And for many of us, we've never even considered feeling what our organs do when we're digesting, when we're resting. We might not realize that we have a clenched stomach all the time. And that would be my cue for you all to connect with your body and see right now, is there anything tightening in your body? Are you tense in your chest? Are you tense in the groin muscles? Are your feet clenched into the carpet? Or can you just be in a more regulated, we could say relaxed, less on guard state? And again, this self-awareness with time brings us to know, oh, wow, I am tight down there, or I'm tight in my throat, or I'm squinting my eyes and I really don't have to be, right? So the more self-awareness we build, the more we become aware of the things that we hold and that we're always holding on to, essentially. Four, follow your impulse. Follow your biological impulse. I'll add the biological. This means listening to your body's organic needs. Listening to your body's organic needs. So this isn't the impulse of, I often joke about this, but it's a real thing for many people. It's not the impulse to eat every single cookie in your cookie jar, right? Or to clean out the ice cream container, or whatever it might be that is looking to soothe you from something. Impulses for me in this case is, are you needing to go to the bathroom? Are you needing to put on a warmer piece of clothing? Are you too hot and you need to take something off? Are you tired and you need to rest? Are you thirsty? Are you hungry? Or are you not? And a lot of this following impulse is related to the autonomic nervous system, because the autonomic nervous system, and this is important to make this connection, it governs our temperature regulation. It governs our digestion. It governs our sleep-wake cycle. And so when we override our need for food, or the fact that we don't need food, but we keep eating, it's sending a signal to the system that says something's not right. Why aren't you listening to me? So even just this aspect of listening to, trying to figure out, and this will be a figuring out process for those of you who are just starting this, you might not have ever considered your real actual impulse for these things. And this gets changed. This gets thrown off so early. It starts with how we make bottle feed babies, right? It starts with how we might not allow a child to have a snack when they're hungry, because mealtime is always at 6. That rigidity that we've been brought up with in our kind of westernized industrial world has thrown us off of our impulses. Same with electricity, right? Lights. So many people always will say, I slept so well when I'm camping, when I'm out in the wilderness. It's like you're waking up and sleeping with the natural light. Of course, there's flashlights and that kind of thing, but it's hard to stay up with a flashlight, right? When it's dark, you go to sleep. So these impulses are there for us. And if we've not been paying attention to them for so long, it might take some time for them to start to resurrect and talk to you, but they are there. So that's what that one means. 5, joints and diaphragms. So these are these little containers, and this is going to seem really abstract. If you've followed ever the theories of, say, Eastern medicine, we have, they would call them chakras, right? From head down to toes to the ground. In osteopathic traditions, there are these levels also that align perfectly with the chakras. And there's also these areas where we have glands, thyroid, thymus, or gonads and testes and ovaries, the pineal, the hypothalamus, right? So we have all these things in our body that produce chemicals, put out things, and they really do line up with the chakras of Eastern tradition. It's interesting, right? And so part of the work we'll do is working with these levels, but from a very structural, and we call it diaphragmatic way. So we call them diaphragms, even though there isn't the diaphragm that's in your lungs, it's not in your head, but there's these containers at different levels of the body that hold emotion. They hold memory. They get tight. Has anybody here had ever a tight chest, right? Solar plexus, I can't breathe. It's tight in my throat, or this pressure in the head, right? Or pain in the lower back, but you didn't do anything weird. It can be that these diaphragms have been contracted. And the fascia, which is this structure that's kind of around muscles, the tissues, they also get tight. And so part of the work we're going to do, working with the diaphragms and the joints, joints just mean where bones come together. We have many, many joints in our body, finger joints, ankle joints, hip joints, vertebral joints, even the joints in our skull. We work with those, and this comes back to the pretty drawing you drew on page 2. If the flow isn't moving through all these systems, that's where we get pain. That's where we get tension. That's where emotion gets stored. And so very soon, one of the first lessons that gets into this is called basic joints. And you're going to do a lesson where you hold, I teach the wrist. The wrist isn't necessarily the most important thing. It's just easy to hold your wrist, right? But we work with these, and I'm going to go to the line here, these little containers. So this is on the handout. Little containers and spaces that need to be open and resilient and in flow. So these joints and diaphragms are these little containers and spaces that need to be open and resilient and in flow. You will learn how to work with those with yourselves, with yourself. And they are some of the more powerful lessons because they're bringing your attention to areas that you've maybe never considered to touch, to connect with, and to put just good healing energy to them and inquiry. If you've ever worked with, has anybody here done craniosacral therapy? Some of you maybe have done osteopathic work. You can find a good osteopath. That's a good thing. It's hard to find them. There's more in Europe. It was really a practice that developed in France. But that is what a lot of the craniosacral practices are doing, is they're opening up these areas. What we also need to understand is when you open up an area, what do you think might come through? Emotion, pain, shaking, joy, like any stuff can come up. And so this is why we wait until we get a little further in, because we want you to have the nervous system basics so that you can connect to the ground. When these things start to move, you can be like, oh, I'm here. Oh, what is a resource? I need my cup of tea, right? I'm feeling a bit too much. I don't want to pop out into more sympathetic activation. I don't want to go into shutdown, but whoa, I just opened up my throat diaphragm or my lung diaphragms and I just want to cry, right? There's these ways that we start to open these things up, and we want these balls to come out of our pool. So that's a very long way for me to say, when we work with these joints and diaphragms, we're cajoling, we're warming up these areas so that the balls, the stressors, the traumas, the emotions, the sensations that are trapped in these areas can be set free and poof, leave the building, leave the swimming pool, right? Because we don't want them in there. And I know a lot of you have probably heard of Gabor Maté and his work, great author and doctor, not anymore so much, but author and educator. And he talks about this concept of the body says no, one of the best books I think he's written, still probably the best one, I think, the body says no. And he talks about how when we trap emotion, when someone's always happy, even though they're really pissed off, you're bringing these emotions, these sensations, you store them. And the places that these things get stored are in these diaphragms, in these joints. And this is where we then get sickness in the body, in organs, in spaces, because there is a tension, there's a trapping, and these balls, these stressors can't release. So hopefully I've sold you on how important those joints and diaphragm lessons are. They're really important. If you were to go and work with a touch practitioner who's trained in the work I do and our colleagues do, they would put their hands on these different spaces of your body. And it's not to manipulate, it's not to massage, it's just to put intention and awareness to those areas and let that area basically talk, right? Let it express those sorts of things. Number six. Final one here on page three, the kidney adrenal interface. So these lessons will come in later in the program, and they're very, very important because the adrenals pump out our stress chemicals, right? Adrenaline, cortisol are two of the main ones. And for those that don't know the anatomy, the adrenal sits on top of the kidney. And we usually have two kidneys, although we can survive with one. But the kidneys are mid-back-ish, and their job is to filter urine. It helps to balance our blood chemistry. They're very important little organs. And on top of the kidney is the adrenal. Kidney means renal, so ad means above. And so we work just like the joints and diaphragms with the kidney adrenals through intention, through talking to them. Again, if you were to see someone one-on-one, a person would put their hands under the back. Again, not to manipulate, not to cajole, but just to offer that support. But you will learn how to do that yourself in SVSM. So the kidney adrenal interface, I'm going to go to the handout now. Primary organ system that goes on alert. It goes on alert and reacts severely in stressful situations or in a stressful situation. Right? So it can even be a perceived threat, right? Or you hear something that's not good and your adrenals can pump out chemical. It's a threat. It's like, oh, it sends out a blast of chemical to prepare you to fight, to flee. And we do want this. We want this when there's a real stress or real threat. So we work with the second line there, or the second sentence. We work with the kidney adrenal interface so that we stop the system, so that we stop the system from hurting itself or scaring itself. So we're working with this kidney adrenal system so that we stop the system from hurting and scaring itself. In many ways, we're stopping the loop of perceived threat. This is something that takes time. This comes back to working with, say, early trauma, developmental trauma, early surgical trauma, which would be classified as early trauma. The system got really scared, right? And it might have been stuck. It might be stuck in that loop from birth or from in utero. This is where the transgenerational traumas pop in, right? The world is a dangerous place. I'm going to die. Everyone's dying. I have to protect. I have to secrete these chemicals to preserve and protect. But let's say you're not in that village that's being bombed anymore. You're not in that household that is violent and toxic. You're not in that surgical arena as a two-month-old being operated on. You're not in there anymore, but the system hasn't gotten the memo that it's not in that anymore. So part of working with the kidney adrenals is saying to the system, hey, do you really need that? And that's how you talk to them. That's how I'll teach you how to talk to them. I know you've had to put the guards up. I'm not going to ask you to put the guards down, but maybe consider what it might be like to have a little less guard on. Because you can't say to someone who's living in that state, and many of you might be in that state, get rid of the guards. Just throw them out the window. That won't work. You're too smart. The system knows we need a little guard just in case, right? So part of this interface work with the kidneys and adrenals is it's like buttering up. If you know that saying, you're slowly convincing the system, what would it be like to be a little less on, not totally off, but a little less on. Because we want to stop that cycle, because that's the cycle when the cortisol, which is one of the chemicals, is constantly being pumped out. It is harmful. It is toxic to our cells, right? We want cortisol when we need it, but we don't want it to be always pumping out. And if we pump out too much, this is where adrenal fatigue comes in. The system can't muster up the guards. The guards are completely on holiday. So this is where we then shift from being hypervigilant, being able to push, go, 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 go. I know many of us maybe have had that. You know, we were rock stars in our work and our career, and then we crash. And that's the system not being able to keep pumping out the chemicals. It's worn out. This is why when you end up in that state with chronic adrenal fatigue, usually it comes with autoimmune, digestive problems, pain, because you need healthy amounts of cortisol to be anti-inflammatory. This is why if you go and you have an inflammation, you go to a normal doctor, they'll give you what? A cortisone injection, a steroid cream, prednisone. That's cortisone. That's cortisol to take the inflammation down. Now, in an acute sense, it might be an important thing, but we want the system to create its own anti-inflammation through healthy levels of cortisol throughout the day. This is a whole other topic, but suffice it to say, we don't want the system to be pumping out these chemicals all the time because eventually it will run out. And so part of the kidney adrenal face interface work is literally plumping them back up, fluffing them back up, giving them time to rest, and then they recover, and they do recover. So final word there, or line, I should say, it can take up to 2 or more years to recover and repair this circuitry, even after the stressful stimulus is gone. Now, I'm sharing that with you just to be honest. These are not my words. These are words from my mentors, specifically Kathy Kane. It can take up to 2 years to recover and repair the circuitry, especially when you have been so depleted. Doesn't mean that you don't improve in that time, but this is where, and for all those here who know you fall into this category, if you feel amazing after the first time you do some kidney adrenal work through SBSM, and you have this impulse to like clean your entire house and go shopping and make food to freeze into your freezer, don't do it. Because that's your system craving that energy and that capacity, but you need to titrate. So maybe you just clean your bathroom, right? You don't clean the whole house. And I say that humorously, but also seriously, because you don't want to recrash the system. You want to slowly layer the building of foundation, slowly. And if you know anything about building, you got to let the foundation settle. You can't build on the foundation when it's still sloppy cement, right? You need to let it settle. Then you maybe do another layer. And then when the layers are really strong, then you put the house on, then you put the framing on, right? Then you put the drywall in. So you can think of it that way. You really want to take your time building this capacity so that you can add more positive stress to the system. So you can start exercising. So you can start socializing. So you can start working again. So don't be discouraged. It takes time. And yeah, an alum said in here, it has taken 3 years to get enough containment to go to lab 4, right? So this is what we want you to do. We want you to go at your own pace and really listen to the impulses and what your body needs. Okay. One more comment I'll read. Obviously, this is from an alum. After the first kidney adrenal exercise, I was exhausted and slept for 3 hours. Yeah, good to follow your impulse. If these little guys do let down and the guards are like, think about this. Imagine you have guards protecting you since you were in utero and you've finally gotten the message to them that they can take a break. Think about guards at Buckingham Palace. They've never had a break. You might not see them for 3 weeks because they really need to rest. So it's the same with your system. What sometimes people fear is I'm never going to get anything done if I'm having 3 hour naps after every time I do one of these exercises. And I could see how that mind game might play with you, but just know that at the beginning, you might need more rest. You might need more repair because the system is so depleted. But again, once you start building that foundation and building, it will allow your system to just have more of that. Basically, your swimming pool is getting bigger, right? And you're taking out stressors. And then that's where that flow comes in and that healing. So let's go to page 4. 2 more pages. Let's have a little water. Take a little break, everyone. Orient. Let your eyes rest a bit. Okay. So page four, we're going to go back to the swimming pool and beach ball analogy. So everything here, we've already kind of said. So this is like a review. This is a bit of a review. But review is very good. So let's do it. So first thing, the many balls packed into this pool represent the stressors, the toxicities stored within the body. Yeah. So just to recap, got all these things stuck inside. This is nervous system dysregulation. We really simplify it, right? As we have learned, and as you'll learn, trauma is not in the event, it's in the nervous system. You can have two people who have had the exact same traumatic event. One person is fine, the other person not fine, right? And it has to do with how we were originally wired. We'll get into that closer to biology of stress video number four. So that will be learning, new learning for the newbies. So again, the balls packed into this pool represent the stressors and toxicities stored within the body. This is nervous system dysregulation. And the toxicities can be memories, sensations, emotions, stored shocks from shock traumas. But it also can be, you know, stored toxins, like things that we were exposed to that our system has trapped in our system. So that is also a real thing. When we have too much toxin in our system due to lifestyle, due to being exposed to things that aren't good for us, that also impacts our regulation. And I know some of you know this because you're maybe in the midst of healing from some toxicities and such. So that is also part of this. So the next line, there's a lot of lines there that are blank. Many balls means, I'm just going to read them and I'll just keep rereading them until you get them all. Old survival stresses and trapped trauma. So old survival stress and trapped trauma. Two, and these are in no order of importance, it's just how we have to do it with the English language. Two, chronic daily stress. Right. So you could have released all the traumas that you had from when you were young and all those things. But if you keep stressing yourself out with things that you hate and people that you don't want to be around and foods that aren't good for you, that's still going to add balls to your pool. Typically, though, as you release these old things, your system gets smarter and it knows, nah, that's not good for me. Right. So it goes in tandem, these things, typically. Next line, biological impulses that aren't followed. So again, these balls can be the tears. I'll keep it with biological impulses. It can be the pressure in your bladder because you're not going to the bathroom enough, right? It could be the low blood sugar because you're not eating enough. That is causing stress to the system. It's causing the system to break down muscle and things that you need to keep for function. So biological impulses that aren't followed. We already went into all those, so I won't cover them again. Next one down, not letting emotions out. So not letting emotions out. So tears that were held back, anger that was held back, joy that's held back, disgust. We'll get into emotions a bit more as we move into the further training calls, but all these emotions, sensations that aren't felt. So emotions and sensations go hand in hand. Basically, our emotions start out as sensations, and then we interpret them in the brain as this is sadness, this is anger, this is surprise, joy, disgust, etc., fear. But they always start as sensations. And as you get better, smarter at listening to your body, you're going to pick up on these things. Now, this is deliberate or unconscious. So you might not even know that you're holding in an emotion. You might not know that there's a sensation there that you're not paying attention to. That comes down to the system being not connected, not that interoception isn't there, right? So at the beginning, it's possible that you're unconscious to these things that you're holding in. But then as you become more aware, more self-aware, and you build up your capacity and there's more room for those balls to move around, you will actually be like, wow, I'm holding in something. I can feel it. I can now feel the tension in my gut. I can now feel the clamping of my throat. You know, often you'll feel, has anybody ever felt that burning in the throat when you're holding back tears? Yeah. It can be really intense, like your throat's on fire, your chest's on fire. That is a sensation that's showing you that you're holding something in. You're keeping that ball inside. And it can take practice to move those out when you've been trained to hold on to those so, so much. So all those balls can mean many things. Those are some of them. Number two, or number B, next one down. The goal is to release those balls. So now if you look at that picture, it's changed. It now has an opening. So there's a ball going out and there's a ball coming in. And the next page, we'll get into this a bit more. We'll have some more imagery here. So then in addition to releasing these balls, we're going to want to grow capacity. That'll come on the next page. But there's times when the thought of releasing these balls is a little confusing. It's like, I'm not so sure how I'm supposed to, like I'm feeling this tightness, but I can't say, okay, body, I want you to cry. Yeah. That can be tricky when you've been programmed to not cry or to not set a boundary or to not say, ouch, that hurt, right? Everything's been tightly buttoned up. The classic stiff British upper lip, it's there, right? It's not just the Brits that have that. It's Western society. We keep it in, right? And so sometimes what has to occur before we know what to do is we work with those basics. We work on growing capacity. So that's where orienting, if you're not sure, if you're feeling this and you don't want to know what to do, you bring your attention to the outside world, or maybe you just feel your feet on the floor, or maybe you take your warm cup of tea and you just feel that sensation. So it's not about distracting and denying that thing that you're feeling that's intense. It's about adding one little thing in that might help your capacity to stay a bit bigger or not clamp down. Because think about this, you're feeling, I'll use this example, you're feeling that tightness in the throat, you start to panic, you're not sure what to do. As that happens, your pool's getting smaller. That makes sense? You're smallering your pool. You're making your pool smaller, yeah? You don't want that. So when you feel that intensity, even though you're not getting that thing out, because it might not be tears, it could be something else, right? Okay, I'm going to connect to the ground. I'm going to connect to the world around me so that you don't clamp down that pool on that big ball. I hope that makes sense. Practice will make this more clear. You have to practice. Page five. This is where I like these images because they're fun. And even when you visually look at them, you see more expanse, you see more space. So first line, C, we want to create more exit paths to release those balls. So now we have the pool with an opening on two sides. And notice how I have balls coming in, right? Let's be realistic. There's always going to be stressors coming in. It's just part of life. But we want to have the exit also happening. Right? We want to have the exit happening. One simple way to play with this is whenever you moving, like, you know, make a pact today forward, if I feel pain, my classic example is if you stub your toe, if you, you know, have a little burn from a hot kettle or something, or you nick yourself cutting vegetables with a knife, don't ignore that. That is like gold, golden medicine to pause, feel your body, feel the impulse, maybe the impulse is to swear at the table, you know, or exclaim something, or maybe there's tears. And then you might go, this is ridiculous. I've just nicked a tiny part of my finger and I've done that so many times. Why am I in a puddle of tears? Well, chances are you've just given your body the permission to feel something, and it's a proxy for 50 plus years where you never allowed yourself to feel pain and you pretended you were fine. You're not fine. You just broke open skin. Your immune system is starting to have a response to clot that blood. That's a real thing. That's your autonomic nervous system working for you. So how can you feel the system doing what it's supposed to, the heat, the pain, you know, and then you clean it, you put a Band-Aid on, you take care of yourself, right? So that is one example of how you can be active, proactive in creating more exit paths. There's no reason to not do that now other than your psyche saying this is stupid, right? So play with it when these things occur. Can't stress that enough. That will help you release the other balls. You see where I'm going with this? If you can really listen to your system in the present moment and work with these things, it will allow your system to say, hey, they're paying attention now. They're paying attention to pain. They're taking care of me. Maybe we can start to lift up these big, big balls that have been in there from that time when I broke my arm when I was 5 and I fell off my bike, right? I held it in because I didn't want to show pain. And now it's like, okay, that was not good. I had a full fracture. That probably hurt, right? But you stoic, you know, stoicism comes in. You're fine, all these things. That's my true story. I broke my first broken bones when I was 5. And I kept breaking them until I was 25, until I learned better, right? So this is the other thing. If we don't work with this stuff, we'll keep getting into trouble. We'll keep repeating these injuries. Because the system will say, we're going to keep doing this until you listen up and you really, and I know there will be people here who have a story similar to mine, where you keep getting into trouble, you keep getting into accidents, you keep getting into the same crappy situations. And that's where you have to really stop the cycle and be like, okay, we got it. We got to work with this. Next one down, we also want to create more space. I've already been talking about this, so this is all common knowledge now. Space in the pool. So if you look at the pool, it is now bigger. We've made it bigger, same amount of balls, and there's just more room. There's just more room. When there's more room for those balls and those stressors to flow, think back to your drawing with the circles, it will be easier to see them and feel them and move them out. When they're so trapped in there, it's just like a block of cement, right? And so we want to move and open the capacity. So again, to go back to the words here, we want to make more space in general. Space means capacity. Space means capacity too. And I'm going to read a bunch of things again. Sense and be with the body sensations. Sense and be with the body sensations. Experience and emote, so move out emotions. Notice what's happening on the inside. So that's that interoception. Again, when you have a block of balls stuck in your pool, it's really hard to differentiate what's there. If I think about myself when I first started doing this work, if you asked me what I noticed in my body, I would say nothing. But that's not true, because there is something. But everything was so packed in and so tight and so frozen that there's no nuance. There's no nuance to what a person is feeling. And so this is where we have the I'm fine culture. I'm fine. I don't feel anything. We're meant to feel lots, right? We're meant to have nuance. And so when we notice, start noticing these things and we build capacity, we start to have more quality, more texture. And at the beginning, it can feel a little weird because going through life, I'm fine. I don't feel anything. And then all of a sudden you're feeling intensity and emotion. It's like, whoa, this is weird. And that's just the system coming online, right? And then eventually it swings the other way. So it's a much more regulated. Another thing, space means capacity to be with a stress outside. So when things come to us, stresses, bad news, accidents, how can we stay connected to ourselves as well as that stress so that we know how to process it? If we disconnect from our body, we're not going to allow the system to do what it needs. So again, this is all in service, again, of following impulse, being able to communicate with the system and be like, ah, I'm feeling the stress coming. And the stress doesn't have to be a trauma. It could be, it's so hot outside, I need to find shade, right? Or it's so cold, I need to shift my situation to warm up. It doesn't have to be a trauma. It can be a stressor like the temperature, right? That kind of thing. The other thing, we have more space. We think and communicate more clearly, right? So when we have more capacity, when we have more space, when our balls aren't so tightly wound up, our brain is more able to function. So what that means, again, is when our survival mechanisms are running our show, right? When the guards are up, there's not a lot of nuance. There's not a lot of creativity. There's not a lot of reflection that can happen because the system is like, we just need to protect, right? We just need to preserve. And so when we start to take those guards off and we start to open up capacity, how we think, how we communicate, it improves. Because the brain is like the digestion. It's still an organ that's impacted by the nervous system. It's impacted by our survival. It's important, just like our digestion is, but a lot of this stuff is not being driven by our cognition. It's being driven by this autonomic energy that's keeping us safe. So, final one down. E. So the best scenario is continual exits and lots of space so that our capacity is so big and we are constantly refueling, regenerating, letting go of stuff. I can feel this tightness. I'm not going to ignore it. I'm going to be with it right now. Right. So what happens is we start to become more aware and bring this stuff on is it will be hard for us to keep things in because we'll feel it. I'm like, I can't do that. I can't hold that in anymore. I can't not take care of myself tonight. Right. I have to do these things for my system. So again, if you look at that drawing, it's just got more space, more exits, and there's less balls inside. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, right? Compared to all of them at once, right? And there's always going to be stressors. That's the thing. That's the key. This is not about zenning out on top of a mountain with no worries in the world. If you're living in Western society, in industrialized living, there will be stressors, there will be sirens, there will be people that you don't want to hang out with, but how can you have that capacity so that you can process these things as they come through in the moment so that they don't fester, right? So that is one way of saying, take care of yourselves. Don't worry so much about the old stuff. It'll start to, trust me, it will come through when it's ready. Worry about or focus on the now and what is immediately in front of you and how your system responds to that, right? To the moment, to the people, to the influences, all those things. Boom, on the dot, 90 minutes. So Thank you. Training call number one, complete. I want to acknowledge the people listening to the recording because some of you did not come here live. And so everyone who came in afterwards to listen and learn, thank you for coming in after. For everyone here live, thank you for being here live. Rebecca, thank you for being in the chat. Thanks to Bonnie for keeping things in check. Let this sink in. And if anything, your homework, in addition to, of course, going through the material in the course, is to really honor your system's impulses and how you start to feel, how it is, how it reacts, how it acts to current day stressors. That is one of the simplest things you can do. And that builds capacity, right? That builds capacity. So start with these little tiny things and just know that that over time, over weeks, over months grows capacity. It grows the ability for you to contain. It increases flow and all the things we've talked about. Okay. Thanks, everyone. Great first call. We'll see you next week. Same time, same place. Number two. Bye for now.